spreading their message to millions. Spreading their message to millions. Kiss Talk. Talking Kiss. Kiss fans and Kiss podcast. With your host, Mike from Nashville. Tuck Watts. And special guest, it could even be you. Now here they are, your Kiss Talk crew. All right, everybody, we're back. Kiss Talk finally back after a little short hiatus. And Tuck's in the house. Tuck, what's up?
Hey, man, it's great. Fighting a little bit of a cold, so my voice is a little scratchy, maybe. I don't know. I really don't know what it sounds like. But, hey, everything's great. The Kiss Tour's going. They've worked their way across the U.S. now. They're, I guess, in the Midwest. So that seems to be going well. Maybe other things in the Kiss world not going so well, but we'll talk about all that stuff, I'm sure.
Absolutely. So, I mean, if we just kind of dive right into where we left off, which was just before, or I guess a week before, a little bit further back than that, before Vegas, before we took a little hiatus. In case our new listeners don't know, I travel a lot. And life happens, and Tuck and I get going different directions. So we apologize for the inconsistency, but we're going to try to work on that a little bit.
But, absolutely.
But moving along, because there's always something good to talk about, we got a lot of little topics we're going to buzz through on this show. If it's the first time you've joined us, welcome to Kiss Talk. I'm Mike Williams. Tuck's Tuck Watts. Should I have said it that way? I did. Okay.
Yeah.
And we're here because we are Kiss fans. We like to talk about Kiss. We like to talk about Kiss fans. And we also like to talk about other Kiss podcasts because I'm a giant fan of podcasts. And that's the reason I'm doing a Kiss podcast is because I like to talk about other podcasts. So anyway, so diving right into where we kind of left off, we had Joe Polo on our show. The last time we actually had an episode.
Is that guy not awesome?
And Joe, great man. One of the kindest people around, you know, I mean the whole, I don't know. I mean, all the podcast guys are great, but, yeah, Joe, Sonny, Jody, great guys, Brent. I got to be on the Podcast Rock City Live event with, Brent and D-Rock Wednesday night. That was a blast. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate all you guys at PRC letting us kind of do a crossover there. So a big thank you. All right. So jumping in, we were headed basically to the Vegas show last time we broke. And we have since. Obviously, we've been to the Vegas show. You've heard some of the other podcasts kind of talk about that. Podcast Rock City had a fantastic event at Kiss Monster Mini Golf out there. They had tons of listeners show up. And for me, that was one of the best parts of it, quite honestly. I mean, there were so many Kiss fans. We all love to talk about Kiss. We all like to talk to each other. And that place was flooded. I actually asked the workers there, I said, how often is it this busy? And they said, well, it's usually only this busy, like when Ace came by, or if Gene's going to drop in, or something of that nature, and people know in advance. And so for Podcast Rock City to be able to say that their show coming from there, and of course Kiss was in town that night, and for them to be a part of that on such a momentous day, I think that's pretty cool. So I was really thrilled to be there. So,
well, and let me say, you know, that's one of the things I think that we all are drawn to Kiss for is the fellowship, right? I mean, look, Van Halen's a great band. Judas Priest, a great band. But I don't know that those fan bases have the fellowship. And I may be wrong, all right? And if I am, I'm sorry. But Kiss's fans, there is a... It is an army, right? I mean, I know that's cliche because the Kiss army, but I mean, there's a connection between KISS fans that I don't know if other bands' fans have that.
I agree with you. I mean, there are certain fans that group themselves together and call themselves, you know, what is it, the Parrotheads, the Deadheads, for Grateful Dead, right. Jimmy Buffett.
Slayer fans and all that stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, I just don't know that there's anything like being amongst the fellow KISS Army guys. So, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, anytime, you know, you're at a KISS festival convention thing, I mean, it's just, it's like you're amongst 20,000 people that are friends, or 20 or 2,000 people or whatever it is.
Right.
I mean, there is a bond that I don't know that other bands have.
Yep. I totally agree.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think everybody listening to this show probably knows that because they're participants. So,
anyway. Right. But it's still one of the things that, that just keeps us coming back for more and more and more. And KISS fans want to know more. And, you know, we're talking about other podcasts and we talked a little bit about it off the air. You know, I was watching the Joe Rogan, David Lee Roth interview, which is an amazing podcast for you to watch. You're going to watch it tomorrow, but,
yep.
You know, KISS pops up in there when Joe Rogan and Roth talk about KISS. And it's just one of those things where they show up, they just sort of pop up sometimes and in a commercial or you're watching a football game and you hear Rock and Roll All Night or New York Groove or something played over the thing. And it just brings a smile to your face.
Yep. That is true. There's nothing like it. So we did the Vegas thing. Got to see that show. It was really great to see it. That show was, what, number 7 or 8, seems like, maybe in the initial shows. So everything worked. Everything was, you know, firing on all cylinders. It was a great show. You kind of move down the line a little bit, and they wind up, you had the Whiskey A Go-Go show in there as well. So, I kind of watched for the haters on that one, right? I waited for somebody to actually go, well, I guess the tour's not doing really well. They had to play Whiskey A Go-Go. So they didn't, you know, they couldn't fill an arena, so they had to go to a 500-seat club.
Now, the set list was different on that show.
Yeah, they dropped it to like 10 songs, and one of the other podcasts, I think it was Three Sides actually, that pointed out it is only this, or it's the first show, that's probably the easier way to put it, since 1990, when was the Weenie Roast? 93?
94.
Okay. Since.
Because the only, no. 96. 90,
I think it was earlier than that.
95? Because that was the first show of the reunion, right? I mean, basically.
Yeah, I guess you're
that
right.
That was the show before Tiger Stadium.
Yeah. So the stat there was that is the first show, the Whiskey A Go-Go show, that they did not play Rock and Roll All Night since the K-Rock Weenie Roast of June 15th, 1996, as it pops up over here on my side.
When was Tiger Stadium?
That not popping up over here on my side.
But it was close to that because yeah. They played the Weenie Roast and that was sort of like their warm up. And then Tiger Stadium with Alice in Chains, the first real show of the reunion tour.
That's like June 28th, 1996.
So 2 weeks later.
Yeah. So, I think that's kind of cool. That song was not played because, I mean, you talk about a song that a lot of us, and I'm guilty of this. I'll be the first person to tell you that I don't care if I ever hear that song again, but every single time, but these last two shows that I've been to, when that song starts playing and all the confetti and now the other stuff they kind of got going on, I mean, I get just as excited as the next guy because it really is an anthem. And it's their anthem, and they're proud of it. And I don't mind hearing it live. I mean, yeah. When I'm actually there, I don't mind hearing it. So,
well, and you know, that's one of the things. Paul takes a lot of heat for saying, you know, if we play the deeper cuts, the people at the concerts aren't going to know what the songs are. Of course, right. I'm paraphrasing. And I get that, but you know, Rock and Roll All Night, man, that's the one song. If there's one song everybody knows, it's Rock and Roll All
Night. It is. I totally get it. And I probably, you know, the last few tours and that kind of thing, and I've always been about, man, it would be great if they could play just something different. But I think I understand it more than ever during this tour. You know, Paul basically said in all the press leading up to this, we're going to play the songs that got us here, and that's what you should expect. So with the set list being what it is, I listened to it. I think it's great. I got to hear the Las Vegas. They still had Hide Your Heart in. Starting in New Orleans, they took Hide Your Heart out, put in Dr. Love. So I saw them in Memphis the night after New Orleans. They played Dr. Love. So now I've got to see both versions. Now, not before last in Kansas City. Gene was not feeling well, as I understand it, and they dropped I Love It Loud and did not replace it, so they only played 19 songs. So they're back in Milwaukee tonight and in Chicago tomorrow night. So, you know, I'm assuming they're going to add it back in because, it's one of those songs some people are like, I don't care if I ever hear it again. But the crowd gets it. You know, they're singing it. So I don't see that it's a song that gets dropped permanently by any means.
Right.
One of the other podcast, I believe it was, again, Three Sides, they actually did an episode last week that was, it was kind of take one and place one. If you could pull one out of the set, what would it be? And Podcast Rock City had this as kind of a side subject also, where they talked about what they thought needed to come out and what would you put back in. And I think everybody's general consensus was that Rock and Roll Over was not represented in the set list, and that it was Hide Your Heart that needed to come out and Rock and Roll Over that needed to go in. And I guess...
Which song from Rock and Roll Over?
Yeah. And I think everybody kind of has their own opinion about what that should be. Oh. Whether it's I Want You, Making Love. I don't know that Dr. Love was actually mentioned in those discussions, but that's the one, and that's the obvious one, because they've played it live anyway, so many times. I think it's a great live song. I think that that first chord that gets hit in Dr. Love is amazing. It just sends chills up me anyway. So I'm happy to see that Hide Your Heart was kind of out and Calling Dr. Love is in. I think from a crowd standpoint, it does go over a little bit better. I was kind of looking around in Memphis at the reaction. I talked to some other people. They kind of said, well, we thought it went over great. I thought it went over okay. I don't know that everybody in the room had their fist in the air, but I'm good with it.
I think there's more. Dr. Love is, I wouldn't say the word more appealing than Hide Your Heart, but I don't know if that's what I'm trying to say. I think there's more... There's probably a little more connection to the classic fans than obviously right. Hide Your Heart.
Yeah. And at these shows, they're asking, you know, who's never seen us before. And there's a tremendous amount of people that are raising their hands and screaming that they've never seen them before. When you look around, I mean, it's all ages.
And so, these shows are selling well.
Yes, they're selling great. I'd probably say they're at, 50% of them are actually sold out. And if they're not sold out, they're within 1,000 tickets or less. So that's what I've been seeing on the Polestar results that are kind of been floating out there. So, yeah, certainly all the people that thought, you know, well, this tour ain't going to sell because Ace and Peter aren't going to be there. You know, I guess you were wrong. Sorry about that.
And the set list is the same. Well, you're wrong.
Yeah, so run on over at the Grateful Dead side or... you know, somebody else's site and go complain about what they do. So, I'm good with the set list. And if I was doing a take one or place one, at this point with that correction already being made, then I don't know how this is going to go over, but I'd pull 100,000 years out. While it's cool for me, I've seen it done that way so many times. And Eric solos in the song and everything. I get all that. But I just don't think that appeals to the masses at all. It's a long song, and people don't seem to know it. And Tuck, you know, I mean, we've had this discussion, and we're going to have this discussion again on the show about, you know, Kiss is one of those bands that has a set of hits they play live and a set of hits that were actually on the radio and charted. And, you know, live, they don't play those. 100,000 Years was not a hit. It wasn't even a release. So I think it was on the backside of one of their singles. And when you look at, if you take the top 16, and I'm saying that only because I just recently, we did the Sweet 16 the other night on the live show. If you take the top 16 hits, I counted 7 of them that they're actually playing. Well, I mean, if you go see any other major act, they're playing like 85% hits and 15% either new material, a cover song, or just something because they want to play it.
I mean, think about Night Ranger. That's, they play all their hits.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. They're a 100% hit band. I mean, most bands are. You could say that, you know, 98% of bands are. I mean, you got bands like Fish that get up there and play 15-minute songs that all sound like one song. I don't know, whatever. But, yeah, Kiss
hashtag
is just
a... shots fired at Fish. wait a minute. When you say Fish, you're talking about the band, not the guy on the Barney Miller.
That would be correct.
Okay. Not Abe Vigoda.
Yeah, that's right.
You might catch these hands if you talk about Abe Vigoda.
Yep. So, but, yeah, I mean, and that's a topic for another day. But, you know, I think they could plug in something else that was a big hit. You know, I mean, up until this tour, you could almost say that they weren't playing their biggest hits because they didn't do Beth on a regular basis. They don't ever do Forever, but they do I Was Made for Loving You. So those are their top three hits. As on the Billboard charts back when they were actually in the top 200. So... Just kind of something to contemplate there.
Right.
So, but, so we've kind of made it through. We've seen Vegas, Memphis. I'll be at Chicago tomorrow night. We're going to be hitting a stride here pretty soon where they're going to be coming through the South here in, about another month.
Yeah, that's sort of mid-April through
early
June, I guess.
Yeah, because I travel, I do try to hit shows wherever I'm traveling to, and that's how I wind up at some of these other crazy places. it just happens to intersect, so.
Yeah, it just happens to. There's no plan.
No plan.
No, if
I was a really good planner, I would have thought, because I'm in Philadelphia for that show, I would have thought, hey, stupid, you should have left a day earlier and hit Madison Square Garden the night before, right? So that's really not thinking. That's a big one I missed. So, but anyway, kind of a lot of little side topics. Kind of bringing up the whole lip syncing thing since we're kind of coming out of the actual show comments. So, yes, they're playing to a click track on a lot of the songs. Because they got coordinating videos kind of going on that require that. There very well could be voice enhancements during choruses that are layering those vocals. If you watch at the end of War Machine, Gene will... I've seen it on both shows I've been to, and then one on YouTube, that... Right at the end of War Machine, because Gene has to go get his fire sword, Gene will turn and walk away with one War Machine left. And it's his voice saying War Machine. So that's noted. I think everybody's fully aware of that. But as far as Paul lip-syncing. Lip-syncing meaning I'm not singing, something singing for me, I'm moving my lips. Is that not the way you define that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah. Lip-syncing means you're not, the mic is not live.
Right, you're not singing. Paul is completely, absolutely singing these songs because, first of all, he doesn't sound that great. I mean, if you were lip syncing, you would have perfect vocals flowing through. But I haven't caught him once not being at the mic at the right time lately. You know, I know early on there were a couple of spots. People were like, oh, look right there. He moved away. Yeah, I didn't even pay much attention to those. But going to the shows now and being close enough to see it, I mean, Paul's singing, and it's his current voice. There is no doubt.
David Letterman used to say, if I was going to wear a toupee, don't you think I'd pick a better one?
Oh, that's a great point. Great point. So I think there was also some question about how much Eric was playing the piano on Beth. And
We even talked about that off.
We did. Off. Yeah. Tuck and I actually did an episode while I was driving down the road one night. And we'd been great if we could have recorded it. So what I believe at this point is obviously there's a backing track there. It's orchestrated. But I do believe that he's hitting the chords on the piano and playing a portion of what you're hearing. So he's playing to a track. So, I mean, I don't know how much more or informational that makes anything other than anybody that wants to complain about it. But I think it's fine. That's what I would do if I was in his shoes. If Paul said, hey, why don't we pull out a grand piano? No problem. I will learn the chords and I will play those parts while I sing it. I have no problem.
If you've known Eric as a fan, right? I mean, not personally, none of us know him like that, but he seems like a pretty good musician,
yeah,
right? I mean, he plays the drums. He's got a great singing voice.
Yeah.
They did that ESP record. He's been on all the Alice Cooper. I mean, you don't get all of those breaks being a crummy musician. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
And so it's not out of the question that he can play the song on piano, right? And so is he doing the whole thing? I don't know.
I don't think he is.
To the point where I say, I don't care.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy that he's playing to the track. I have no problem with that. As long as he's playing something. I wouldn't like it if he was up there faking it, just totally faking it. But, I mean, he's learned the chords. It's not hard to learn those chords and play that song. So,
well, I mean, it might be for me, but I've never, I'm not a musician.
I don't know. If you got 5 months, though, Tuck, and we said, we need you to learn the main chords of this.
Maybe.
I mean, you're hitting the accent chords while you're singing it, so it's doable.
But Eric may have piano experience already.
He may. We don't know.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Over the years, he's been around it. He's been in, come on. The guy has had, some of the most choice gigs.
That's a fact. Right?
Yeah. In music. And he's been around. He's the drummer. But I'm sure he can do other things. I mean, I'm just guessing, but. It's not like he just sits back there and drums. That's what he does. I mean, like Paul Stanley plays the bass, and Gene's a pretty good guitar player.
Yeah.
Dare I say he's a better guitar player than Vinnie Vincent. So.
What? I guess we haven't even talked about that very much lately, have we?
Oh, me. About made me cough. Sorry.
So.
Is that a topic coming up? Is what? No.
Vinnie Vincent? Okay. It's not really on my radar. So Eric Singer's best gig. Wasn't he in a Sheena Easton video or something?
Was he?
No, it was Let's Get Physical. Wasn't it her?
Oh, Olivia Newton-John, was she in that? Well, you know, I know he was in Lita Ford's band. He was in, you know, Black Sabbath, or the Tony Iommi solo band, or whatever, I mean, it was called Black Sabbath, or whatever you call that.
Yeah.
You know, he's been in Alice Cooper. He was in Badlands. He's been in Kiss. And he had that little ESP thing with, who was in that? Fraley played a couple songs on it.
Yeah.
Was Carl Cochran in that?
Not sure.
Crabby sang on some of it. I think Bruce played on some. I mean, come on. The guy's a pretty good musician, so it wouldn't surprise me if he was a decent piano player.
Yeah. So. Wouldn't surprise me. So, you know, I was actually trying to look that up. I hate it when I can't. My memory is getting so bad. But there's some video out there that has Eric Singer in the video. He didn't actually play on the track, but he played in the video, I think. And it was like Sheena Easton or Olivia Newton-John or somebody. Anyway, check it out if you haven't, because he's dressed up all pretty. So yeah, I don't really have any Vinnie Vincent news. I mean, the guy's fallen off the face of the earth, and that's probably, I think we commented on this in a previous episode. That's probably what he needs to do for a while, if he's even planning on coming back. So, I don't know. So, going to another negative topic, your good friend, Nikki Sixx.
Yeah, he was in Olivia Newton-John's music video, Culture Shock. I just found it. Sorry. But you said something about somebody. Who did you say, Nikki?
Nikki, yeah, your buddy Nikki Sixx. So Nikki feels like that Kiss is copying their stage, using the cherry pickers, the lifts, whatever you want to call them. I'm just thinking, you know, how can you even say that when your very first video, well, I believe it was Live Wire, that Mick Mars is drooling a little blood, and Nikki's got some got a little fire going on his legs, and they're wearing makeup, and it appears to be like a miniature Kiss stage. How can you call out Kiss for that? I've heard that, well, he's only doing it because they're releasing the dirt and he's trying to get publicity. I'm just thinking, you pick something else.
Yeah. Well, all right. So are the two, let's just take it face value. Are the two things very similar?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Again, we're talking about rock and roll. All right. In that David Lee Roth interview I referenced earlier on the Joe Rogan show, you know, he's talking about, we're all just copying James Brown. You know, he's not talking about this specific topic, but come on, you know, everybody's copied
everybody.
All right. Kiss got a lot of their stuff, you know, from the Who.
Yeah.
Who got their stuff from whatever, Elvis or whatever.
Right.
Or old blues guys, or, I mean, so yeah, and Motley Crue came after Kiss. There was a lot of Kiss there. There was a lot of Aerosmith in Motley Crue. There was a lot of, you know, those bands. So yeah, and if Kiss did take something from you, okay. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's awesome. You know, it's like saying, you know, I have a picnic coming up in a couple of months and I make awesome hot dogs, right?
Yeah.
And at the end of the summer I come to your house and you make hot dogs and I'm like, dude, you stole that from me.
Yeah.
No, it's just a good freaking hot dog.
Yeah. I had hot dogs at my house. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
You gotta have burgers, man. You can't do, come on.
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought of all bands to call out Kiss for copying something, man. Motley Crue to me was like the secondary Kiss
when they first came out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was their roots. I mean, you go all the way up to Theater of Pain. Theater of Pain was their dynasty. They did the whole color scheme thing. I mean, they became all colorful. They took a different direction with the album, mainly because Nikki Sixx was practically dead and didn't write many songs. But you know, it's all still very similar.
What was that
guy's
name that replaced, that was saying he died, I think? Oh, man, I can't believe you said that. Tripp. Was it like Andrew Tripp?
I don't know.
That said he replaced Nikki Six.
That
you
could
remember
be.
That? Have you heard that story?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Matthew Tripp. Matthew Tripp was a. He claimed that that's him on the back cover, not Nikki Six of Theater of
oh,
Pain.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, you've got to look that up. If you've never heard that story, you've got to look that up online. I had a CD at one time. I don't know, maybe I've still got it. It's called The Strange Case of Matthew Tripp. And it's just him laying out his case for that he was actually playing Nikki Six during that time. And I'm played actually, shows. He's in the videos. He claims to be in the videos. It's crazy.
I see
it's
that.
Almost like the Paul McCartney is dead deal.
Yeah, because it's the bizarre life and sad death of Nikki Six's doppelganger in the late 80s. Known musician Matthew Tripp claimed to have replaced Nikki Six in Motley Crue. There's a whole story there on it that's from loudersound.com. So,
yeah, that's a, if you've never read that, you need to look at that's it's crazy.
That is crazy.
So, I mean, it's almost, which, come on, let's see, did that happen before or after the dude impersonated Peter Criss? So Nikki Six may have stole that. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. yeah, it says actually Doc McGee decided to bring him in to replace Nikki. That's awesome. Oh, well, not a Motley Crue podcast. And there we went and gave them some publicity. But
well, come on. I mean, most Kiss fans probably like Motley Crue.
All
right. So it's kind of pointless to point out that, hey, this looks like something that we did. I mean,
right. I mean, there's probably every Kiss fan went and saw Motley Crue on those last tours where they, they were always over the top. They did a great job with their shows, no doubt. But, and The Dirt, I hope the movie coming out, I guess this month. Yeah, it's March now. I hope that the movie is good, is as good as the book. It's probably one of my favorite rock biography books. So, anyway, there's my.
It's kind of a, again, not a Motley Crue podcast. I'm sorry, but it's kind of a shame John Corabi isn't in The Dirt or like a character playing. They completely ignore that part.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, because they don't want to admit that happened. So it's kind of like, you know, Kiss used to be about some of their other members. So that who? That didn't happen. So, but anyway, I do appreciate Kiss actually throwing up all the members on the screen. They didn't leave anybody out. So thanks, guys. Appreciate that. They're all deserving.
They all played a part, man.
Yeah, absolutely. We were all there all of it. So.
And, some of those, Mark St. John, of course, a weird choice at the time and kind of a weird guy. If you ever met him, I met him once in Atlanta. And, just a strange, Vinny, of course that's well documented. But they all played their part, it's Eric, of course, the tragic.
Yep.
Stuff, but it's just great to see that they acknowledge okay, and it as much flack as Paul caught, and maybe Gene to a lesser extent for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame stuff, he was standing up really for all of them.
Yeah,
it wasn't that he was standing up necessarily just for Tommy and Eric, though it sort of was framed that way. I think he was standing up for everybody.
I could see that. Yeah. As much as we disagreed with it and we wish that they had jumped on the world stage, basically, and done something,
If you're going to induct 28 members of the Grateful Dead.
Hey, I was there. I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony for Kiss, and I had to go through 172 members of the E Street Band. It was horrible. The worst. So, yeah.
You can't tell me. And you know what? If the Rock and Roll, whatever. But maybe not Mark St. John because he only played on one record or whatever. But, Eric Carr needed to be in just as much as those other guys.
Yeah. Bruce and Eric.
You can fight for Bruce. You could fight for Tommy and Eric.
Yep.
and maybe even Vinny. But if you're going to do that many, you might as well just put Mark in too. But,
I would agree. It should have happened. We know that.
Yeah. So
we know that. So, and Bill Coyne too. Why not? Anyway.
Yeah, maybe Sean Delaney.
Just the
Kiss. I mean, seriously. Summer. I mean, that guy was as big a part of the band as the guys on stage, just about.
I think I should have been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a Kiss fan. In fact, I'm going to fly up there and tape like this. I'm just going to walk down the hall, tape up a picture of myself as I'm in the Hall of Fame because I'm a Kiss fan for 45 years.
Now, would you go in as Mike or would you go in as Mickey Thunder?
I would go in as Mike. I'm the Kiss fan. That's the reason I get to go in. So.
Okay.
All right. Next topic. Let's talk just for a second because I think what is to be talked about this is the fact that it's completely gone away and died. And that was the Ace Frehley comments to Gene that everybody says, well, it sounds like Rachel, whatever. But so all that happens and then nothing else happens. So yeah. Whether that was Ace going, you probably shouldn't have said that, Rachel, or I just don't think it was Ace. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
But
or at worst, it was Ace, and he was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because I think Gene and Paul, or Gene or Paul, I can't remember who, maybe it took maybe 10 days after that, where basically I thought they took the perfect response, and they basically said, you know, nothing negative. There's like, well, you know, if that's, you know, what he thinks or whatever.
Right.
That was great.
I think
I could
Paul
not have been
like,
happier.
I'm not even going to comment on that.
Yeah. I could not have been happier that was the response. Yeah. Instead of them lashing out going, well, you know, Ace is probably drunk. Because that's been their typical thing for so long, even though he's attempted to be sober for, you know, 12, 13
okay,
years.
But if you've ever lived with someone with addiction, and let's be honest, Ace has an addiction or had an addiction, or you know, and they say once you're an addict, you're always an addict. And once you've been burned as much as maybe Gene and Paul, and look, I'm not saying Gene and Paul are saints.
Right.
They've got their faults too.
Yep.
But when somebody burns you over and over and over, or even if you just perceive them as burning you over and over and over, that's yep. tough on you. And you become guarded yep. and you start not putting yourself in the position to be burned.
Right.
Right. And I think that's Gene and Paul to an extent. And that's not saying they're perfect. And that's not saying that their response has always been correct to the struggles of anybody that's had issues in the band, but that's just the way we are as people. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we protect ourselves after, I mean, we may give and give and give, but there's a point where we say that's enough.
Right. Well,
and that's just us. I mean, that's not with the millions of dollars that the Kiss empire is that they're also protecting.
And I have no doubt that Paul and Gene were miserable, and Tommy for that matter, because he was on the road with them, that they were miserable managing the whole Ace and Peter attitude at that point. I mean, even when
you're talking about late 1990s.
When the whole exit and Ace talking about, well, I'm quitting again, and or, you know, whether.
Or they were wanting more money or whatever.
Yeah, cause you,
that's another argument. Did they deserve more money? Should they got that? There's a whole bunch of thoughts on that.
And you know, should they have been paid the same or whatever? Because I think Ace was being paid $20,000 a show and Peter was being paid $10,000 if you read the books. You know what? And Peter got all an uproar about Ace being paid more than him. Well, first of all, you have a manager that's responsible for negotiating your contract. So, you know, blame that person. Don't blame Paul and Gene. I just kind of looked at that like,
yeah, you know, if you look at it from a business standpoint, Paul and Gene owned the company
yeah.
at that point.
If you're going
to, and if you're Paul and Gene and you're going into a reunion situation like they were going into, where you're not really sure this is going to take off,
and they absolutely
or completely fall on its face,
they absolutely did not know. They were very unsure. If you go back and you read all that, that they had no idea that this thing was even going to work. I mean,
I want to even say they had only promised like 10 shows.
Well, they kept Eric and Bruce on a retainer for a year,
right?
Because they wanted to make sure they were taken care of, but they also just didn't really think, well, this may not even work. It really wasn't until, you know, they put Dodger Stadium out there for sale. Not Dodger Stadium, but
Tiger
Stadium. And it sold out in like, what, I don't know, a couple minutes. That they were like, what? You know, and Doc McGee's going, I told you this was going to work. So, because, you know, I mean,
but it's just like anything. I had a tree cut down a couple weeks ago. I took quotes from 4 or 5 different tree cutters.
Yep.
Did I pay I might like the guy that put in the highest quote. I don't mean I'm paying that guy the highest quote. I'm going to get the guy that's going to cut it for the least amount of money.
And that also doesn't, right? Yeah, that doesn't mean that because you liked the guy that had the lowest bid that you liked him. And so, well, I'm going to pay you what the highest guy actually quoted me. Because, I mean, Peter's coming to the table at that point, or after the fact, going, man, you only paid me 10 grand a show. Well, that's what you agreed to do it for.
Right.
So if you thought that was your value and you agreed to that and signed the contract, congratulations. That's what you get. If you didn't think that that was enough or that you were worth more, you should have, your manager
drawn that line.
Should have fought for, or your agent or whatever, should have fought for another 15 or 10 or whatever. So, or did you even ask? I mean, and I think the story goes that Ace and Peter had the same manager at some point and that kind of thing.
Right. During the Bad Boys tour.
Right.
Which was right before the reunion, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I just kind of look at that and I go, how can you be mad? You already know Paul and Gene, right?
Yeah.
Paul and Gene were about making money. They didn't know whether this was going to happen or not. So, sure, they're going to be conservative. I don't know. If Paul and Gene knew that they were going to make millions and millions of dollars over the next 5 years, which is what they basically signed.
Right. And you're talking about this is maybe late 94, 95 when these negotiations are taking place.
Yeah.
Right. And if you know by 1999, we're going to make $300 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. They might pay Peter more.
Yeah.
But here's another thing. Had Peter, when he left, went out and released a string of decent albums, a couple of hits here and there, like Kiss had.
Sure.
He would have been in a stronger position to negotiate for more.
Yeah.
You know, and same with Ace.
I mean, the additional fact is that adds to exactly what you're saying is Ace and Peter are out on the Bad Boys tour when they get the phone call, basically, that says, we need to talk to you guys. And they're outplaying clubs and we're paying
200 seaters.
Yeah, we're paying $30 to see both bands. I saw that tour in Nashville. I went out. I was one of 4 people that stood at Peter's bus wanting an autograph. Nobody else came to Peter, right? So Peter's demand was not that great. I mean, the guy was not making any money. So to make 10 grand a night, and you know how much he talked about, oh, I'm so glad to have this opportunity again. You know, you heard that at the first of the tour, right? I'm getting a second chance. This is great. But as soon as he finds out he's making half of what Ace is, I mean, I don't know if he ever knew what Paul and Gene were making a night, but it'd probably make him madder, but it doesn't matter. Boy, we went down that rabbit hole. Sorry. So back to kind of the whole Ace comment thing. I think it. If Ace is smart, he shuts it down. I still have a belief that on the backside of this thing, these guys have said it's a 3-year tour. The tour shirt basically says the tour is over in 2020. It's at the end of the road tour says 2019 to 2020. So I think on the backside of whatever this is, when they figure out it's out of steam, when they come back next year and do the secondary markets and hit the other places in the world they want to hit, I think they either do a show or a string of half a dozen shows, and they have Ace come out and play Shock Me, or and they have Peter come out and they sing Beth, and they pay them to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we said what Kiss should do, and they do absolutely nothing? But I can't see that not happening. And, you know, maybe Bruce comes out. I don't know. Because they've said all along, we're completely open to them coming out and hitting a show here and there. I mean, they said that recently on this after this Ace thing. I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to wish the time away, and I'll just wait and see what happens. So,
yeah, I think it'll happen too.
So. In the good news, Ace continues to book solo dates. You know, just recently booked a date for Nashville, playing Chesterfield, Missouri, after that string of dates he did on the West Coast. So he's still starting to plug away, and he's getting some promoters to bring him into some cities. I have no doubt that his shows are posting decent numbers for a club-level show. So I'm happy to see him return back to our area after being gone since 2009, I think it was. So, yeah, 10 years is a long time. So welcome back, Ace.
But again, it goes to show, if he were – man, I'm going to say this wrong, and I'm sorry. He is a legend, but, you know, if he were, he's only going to be able to play, you know, Nashville, St. Louis, Dallas, Chicago.
Well, yeah, I mean, and nobody's going to see him but Kiss fans. I mean, there's nobody, there's nobody else going to see this guy.
Right.
So.
Yeah. But he's not going to be playing, you know. He can't play Huntsville, Alabama. I mean, he could, but he's not going to – it's not – he's going to be playing these big cities that have big Kiss fan bases in them, or moderate-sized Kiss fan bases in them. And,
yeah.
So but he's still playing clubs. He's not even playing, you know, 5,000-seat places. He's playing
– Yeah, he's playing –
Exidium?
No, he's actually playing Marathon Music Works, which is a little bit – it's a much newer venue than Exit Inn, so.
Okay. We'll see. That's a club in Nashville, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know what the capacity is, but so are you saying that he could not come down and play the Chattanooga Minor League Baseball Stadium?
Chattanooga's never been a Kiss city, so.
So how many bands would you have to add on the bill with Ace Frehley being the headliner to have a decent turnout at the Chattanooga Minor League Baseball Stadium?
Well, but you know, there's, you know, Chattanooga now, they've got Songbirds,
right?
Which is a guitar museum, which if you've never been there, you've got to go. That's an amazing place.
So you saw Kip Winger there.
Yeah, I saw Winger there. But there's also a place called The Signal, you know, and they're bringing in to a city like Chattanooga, which, all right, for people that don't know, Chattanooga is in sort of about halfway between Nashville and Atlanta. It's a very small,
but a decent sized city.
It's not in Atlanta. It's not Nashville. It's I think market size is like in the 80s or 90s. So it's but the you know, Tom Morello is going to be playing up there. Well,
so the Tivoli's bringing in a lot of acts. And is Ace not big enough to play the Tivoli? Because Alice Cooper played the Tivoli.
Yeah, I don't know that he's big enough to play the Tivoli.
Yeah, I would agree with you. He'd have to have somebody else with him. So,
but especially in a town in Nashville, he could play a Tivoli sized place, maybe, but in Chattanooga, no, because I don't think there's the Kiss fan base. There's never been a good rock and roll radio station in Chattanooga.
Right.
That hurts.
And we're killing our podcast because we're too localized. So sorry, guys. Tuck and I are having a side conversation. Sorry.
But these are the same things you would see all of, you know, he's going to play in L.A., but he may not be able to play in Fresno, right?
Right. Agreed. Yeah. So I don't know. It's tough. I mean, and
Fresno is much bigger than Chattanooga, I believe. So
I would think so. And for those of you, I mean, that don't understand, probably one of the most irritating things for me is to see fans post on a band's website, why don't you come to X city? You got to have a promoter that's interested in fronting the money to bring the band to your city. So if you want that done, call your local venues so they can tell their talent agents, which are their promoters locally, or your local promoters, to bring your favorite band. So that's how that works, just so y'all know.
Yeah, and but you also, there's other things in there. You got to have a, you know, a good, or at least a solid rock radio station. And unfortunately, those are very rare nowadays.
Well, and a good promoter knows that if that show can't be promoted, they're not going to bring that artist to that city. So, and yes, you're absolutely right. It's got to be some level of media that supports that. So, yeah, right. if you're one of those cities that everybody has a country and it's all country music and a sports talk station, which some cities now have like 5 country stations, 3 hip hop stations, and 4 sports talk stations and a news talk. Well, more than likely, you probably don't get a lot of rock acts in your city. So put 2 and 2 together there.
Yeah.
Anyway. Where else are we? Yep. So in case you needed another copy of Ace Frehley's Spaceman, like me, because I've only got like 6 different versions, and I was really sitting around just twiddling my thumbs going, man, if there was only a 7th version, because, you know, not having enough vinyl Ace Frehley's Spaceman copies just irritates me. I don't even know what to say. My wife, I know what she has to say. So April 13th is Record Store Day. You know, I'm a big fan of that if you've listened to me on podcast. And Ace Frehley is going to release a picture disc of Spaceman. It's going to be a picture disc that has him all over the vinyl, kind of in the orange jumpsuit. There's a very similar standard album cover version of that. But if you're a collector like myself, you should know that that is coming out and is available at your independent record store days on Record Store Day. And all of them won't get them because those things are printed in limited numbers. I did not see the quantity in which those were printed. I know that last year's Record Store Day release, the orange album, I don't think that was actually a Record Store Day release, or was it? But it was in the independent stores. Was very limited. Here in, you know, Nashville's kind of a medium-sized city. There were 2 copies available in the whole city, and I just happened to show up at the right time and get them. So sorry if you wanted those, somebody here in Nashville. But
you were the one that got both of them.
I did, yeah. Right. Still got them both. Anyway, next item on my list that I kind of want to talk about was a Gene Simmons vault. And because we had a whole episode with Keith Valcourt dedicated to the vault, I kind of want to just discuss this because what he came on the air and talked for a good half hour about was something that never happened. And that was that Gene was going to do the vault. He was going to do it after the show. It was going to be a fantastic event. And that is not what is occurring. If you go to the Gene Simmons vault website, basically, he's now doing it on days off. If you kind of look at the dates, they kind of started in Dallas, it kind of looks like. So randomly on days where he is off, he is doing a Gene Simmons vault experience. And it is in a limited number of cities. Currently, right now, if you look at it, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There are only 8 listed, and it's not in every city. So, something for you to contemplate there. Certainly a change of direction from what we were told early on, and I understand that plans change. And I can see. I mean, Gene would be very tired after a show. So,
well, look, what is he, 60? Is he 70?
Not yet.
69?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, come on. That's right.
So,
look, anyway. I'm not even 50 yet. I'm 49, and sometimes, you know, you just wake up and it's like, okay, well, my knee hurts for some reason. Yeah. You know, sometimes I'll tell my wife, I walk in limping. She's like, what do you do? I said, took a nap.
Yep.
I mean, right. I can imagine all the stuff they're wearing, walking around in platform at 70. Come on. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, Podcast Rock City, I made a suggestion on one of their shows when they were talking about what should kids do. And I said, you know, they should do 3 days in a city. And the first day be for press. Right. The second day be for the things like the vault, the guitar experience, maybe a KISS convention kind of deal, you know?
Yeah. That would have been great.
And maybe they close that night out with an acoustic set where they could play all the rare songs, right? Yeah. And then the next day is the concert.
Could have been a whole nother ticket for that convention type day. That could have been another $1,000 ticket as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, so. or whatever. Or whatever. Right. However they do that, you know. But that would have, had they done something like that, you know, I think that satisfies, you know, on that night. You know, get together like on the KISS convention in 94 or whenever it was, 95 or whenever that happened, right. And,
yep.
And play The Oath, you know?
True.
Play, you know, The Strange Ways and all the songs you're not going to play and just have fun with it. And then the next night you get this the regular set list.
Yep.
That would have been kind of cool. But yeah, you can.
Would have.
You know, and it would have just been 2 days.
Yep.
You know, you go, if you're going to go to the Chicago show, you go a day early, you stay the night in a hotel, you go to the show the next night.
Yeah. I mean, if they had done something like that, I certainly would have participated, but I would have also seen fewer shows because they probably would have charged $1,000 to come to convention day, which would have taken away a couple of, at least, a, you know, two, maybe three concerts that I would be going to. So.
Yeah, but you would end up with another experience.
I agree. I would have easily done that. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And if you were buying the guitar experience or whatever.
Well, that's true.
Which
that's,
is what, $5,000? $8,000?
So far out of range, I don't know, for me at this point. I just that's.
But if somebody were doing that, you would have probably a little more time. It'd be a little more relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Somebody did buy the sword the other night. The
really?
$12,000 sword. Yeah, so he sold at least one.
Huh.
So if you're not familiar with that, Gene's selling his sword that he does his fire breathing with. He's has it priced at $12,500. So if you had $12,500 laying around, you were like, man, what can I buy from Gene? There you go. Very cool item. I would love to have one of those. There's no doubt. But the price is way over the value for me. So, anyway.
Well, and some of those swords, you know, if you know anything about swords, you know, the craftsmanship on some of those, I don't know what Gene uses.
Yeah.
Right? But the craftsmanship on some of those is incredible.
Right.
And if he's using, like, a sword like that, I mean, that would definitely sort of justify the price. But
sure.
But I don't know that he's using top line sword manufacturing processes from Japan or something.
Let's not even talk about what the quality might be. Let's just say how great it is.
Sitting in a cave, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, in other merchandise news, there have been a few things. If you are on top of the KISS merchandising, Funko is releasing another set of KISS version Funko. I don't know what to call them. Figures, I guess.
Those pop figures.
Yeah, pop figures. Right. The other sets have done very well. One set in particular, I mean, huge escalation in value. And, I mean, some people are selling that set for like $800. I've seen it go for four to $800.
Well, just in general, that line of products, not just the KISS, but, you know, all the, you know, the Mario characters and the
right.
Whatever they, you know, franchises they actually produce. I mean, that thing's huge.
Right. Yeah, they sell, I mean, they got to be like in the millions of those things a year because there are thousands of them at certain retailers. You know, it's amazing that all the different characters and their sales is tremendous. So it makes sense that they've come back and done and going to do another set. I do think they're cool. I still have that set, the expensive set. I bought it when it first came out. And I think it's cool, and that it makes it difficult for me to let it go, even with it rising in price like that. Because there are some things I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll let that go. I don't love it that much. But right. It has to be something that I
can like. It is a neat thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like when, and maybe that's not going to be the case in 10 years, but like when the Johnny Lightning cars first came out, oh, that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
And then there was like 1,000 different versions came out, and it's like, well, it's not so neat anymore. Right?
Yep.
The McFarlane toys. Oh, those are cool. And the second McFarlane toys were, okay, those are kind of neat. And then finally it's like, I don't even care anymore.
Right.
But, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how many they're going to make of the new version before once they retire it, they call it vaulted. So once they vault that series, who knows, maybe it'll climb in value. I don't know if they really put limits, or in the case of the initial set, if they just didn't make a whole lot of them, but the demand was much higher. Because with most situations like this, when they know that they are in demand, like the first set is, they're going to release the second set, and you're going to be able to buy them for the next 15 years because they made so many. So,
because they're going to anticipate the...
Sure. Right. Yeah. And they're not going to let them rise in value because they're going to saturate the market. But there is one product that is out that I haven't heard many of the other shows talk about, and that's Virgin Wines releasing, you know, they have a rock and roll series of wine. They call them Rock and Roll Reds, and then they have Whites. But Kiss is also amongst those, and it's not an expensive wine. I haven't heard anybody say, you know, how quality that wine is. I know Kiss had some wines many years ago. I have those in my collection. I've never opened them. From people that did open them, and they said they were horrible, and that was never my intent, because they were really, at least there were a couple of them that were really nice. They were engraved bottles. These that are coming out now, these appear to be just a labeled bottle. But there again, they're not expensive. So you can check that out at virginwines.com. And they have everything from the Police to, they got the Stones on there, Kiss. I think there's a couple others too. So
you drink wine?
I used to. I don't do much. I try to stay away from sugar now, and obviously wine is sugary. Sure. So try to stay away.
I'm a pretty big fan of cheer wine, but I don't think that counts.
It doesn't, but you can say that you drink wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to leave it off. So, another cool item, I guess it is for me, because I like this stuff, as you can probably tell with my Spaceman H. Freely comments earlier, is Dress to Kill's coming out. They are honoring its anniversary, which was last week, I think. With a collection of products, mainly the anchor product being the vinyl with it's kind of clear with some black splotches in it. It's what it looks like. I kind of like that thing, so I am doing the vinyl. However, the other products that come with it, which is like you can get a bundle with a t-shirt, you can get a bundle with a $700 leather jacket, and some coasters and stuff like that, that doesn't necessarily appeal to me, but it depends where you are in your Kiss collecting, I think. So, again, although they're limiting those to 2,000 copies, I think, still the package items just, I don't know, they don't appeal to me anymore, Tuck.
And they've done this with a couple of records, right?
And on the, I did buy on the colored solo albums, I did buy the actual bundle. So I got the t-shirt and everything. And on the Rock and Roll Over, I actually got the t-shirt. T-shirt's kind of cool. But as these are going to apparently continue to come out, and they do have the RIAA gold records available for these two. And they show coming out for like Hotter Than Hell and the other albums, you know, coming down the line. So maybe it's I'm not really interested in that stuff, but if they're going to continue to come out with a colored vinyl for each album, it's funny. One of the comments on, it might've been Kiss FAQ the other day was, do they come out with a brown vinyl Elder? I was like, would you make it yellow? Would you make it brown? I don't know. Anyway, and would they
what's the price on these?
$30.
$30. Okay. Yeah. So, and then, with the shirt, it's probably, what, 60, 70?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it goes all the way up to 900 with that leather jacket. So, but
how many do you think they sell that? Three?
Maybe.
I mean, really? You think they're selling three of them with the jacket?
Maybe. You know, it's not an appealing leather jacket for me. If it was super cool, maybe, but it's not super cool. It's a leather jacket with some Kiss stuff put on it in a very mild way.
And you know what they should do?
I'm talking about if I'm paying $700 for a Kiss jacket, I want it to be blown up with Kiss stuff.
What it should be and what would be cool is like the Rock and Roll Over. On the Rock and Roll Over one, you get a blue jean jacket with a Rock and Roll Over back patch.
Well, and you know, for the End of the Road tour, they did a blue jean jacket with the End of the Road.
Brandon Sharp.
With the End of the Road, the Kiss logo on the back says End of the Road Tour. I bought that. It was $150. It was excessive for a blue jean jacket. It's got like the 1973 date on the side with the logo. It's got the logo on the front. Very cool jacket. So far, I've seen one at the shows I've been to. I've had several people ask me, hey, do they have that on sale at the merchandise booth? And I said, no, this was a pre-sale thing they did last year back in the fall when they announced the tour. You know, there's some stuff that I go for, right? But you're right, for Rock and Roll Over, with that, everybody loves that album cover so much that if you did like a massive Rock and Roll Over logo circle on the back of a jacket and something cool, they could do another blue jean jacket and sell it like that. I agree with you.
So. But again, I mean, in the Hotter Than Hell, one would have the Hotter Than Hell stuff on it. And, I mean, that would just be kind of cool, maybe. But
yeah. But my wife would probably say, "How many Kiss coats do you need?" Yeah, I agree. I'm getting there, guys. It's kind of like
in 60 years, man. The Goodwill is going to be a great place to shop.
It will be. So those young kids at these Kiss shows will go to a Goodwill and go, "Hey, my dad took me to see Kiss when I was like 5." This is cool.
I don't remember
cool
anything retro. Other than throwing up in some girl's lap.
Yeah, cool retro. So, and I guess the last thing is effective today. They are starting. If you haven't been to the shows yet, they do have an event T-shirt which actually has the city name on the back of it. I wish it had the city name and the date, like they did on the farewell tours. But it doesn't have the date. It does have the city. It's the same T-shirt every city with basically the city name at the top on the back above the Kiss dates. Apparently in cities that they have extras, they're putting those on the website for sale. They started doing that today, which is cool. They sold out of them in Memphis. You can tell. I mean, the only ones that they actually have shirts left over appear to be those first 5 or 6 shows. But since then, they're obviously selling out of them because they sold out of them well before the end of the show at the Memphis show that I was at. So if you want to get one of those at your city, make sure when you go in the venue, get into
straight.
And guys, these merchandise lines are insane. People are buying this stuff up like crazy. I mean, they're the typical drumheads, and these T-shirts are $50. There's no T-shirt cheaper than 50, and they go up to 100, depending on what T-shirt you want. But the tour book is also amazing. It's a great buy at $35 when you compare it to what you're paying for a T-shirt. Buy that tour book.
That's usually what I buy.
Yeah, so you also can get that now online. They've put that on there.
And these are oversized, like they typically are for Kiss.
Yeah, it's not their biggest by any means. You know, back in the day, you needed both hands to carry the thing. but
right.
But it's thick, and it has some foil outlining in it on some of the pictures. It is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, if you're not going to go to a show, or you don't want to buy it and carry it at the show, go on Kiss Online to the End of the Road store and buy it now. It is a great book. I don't know if there's going to be a second version that actually has pictures from this tour in it. But what the tour book does is it has like a 2-page section for every tour they've done. And it really helps you kind of think through, wow, yeah, I was at that tour. Because I think in the 2000s, I kind of got lost in all the Freedom Rock, Rock the Nation, Alive 35. You know, you kind of got lost in what tours there actually were. There seemed to be so many different names for them.
Right.
But, it fantastic, well done. You know, I know Keith LaRue certainly had a part of that, and you did a fantastic job, Keith. I'm not sure who else to credit other than I know there's some contributors in there like Mark Cicchini, over Three Sides, but job well done. It's well worth it, man. $35. I mean, I'll buy that every day as opposed to a $50 t-shirt. So,
yeah. Let me ask you this. Do we know, and I haven't looked this up, so, and I don't know why I have not looked this up. Are they doing date specific guitar picks?
No. So I did catch a couple of Paul picks. There are two versions of the pick. One has a picture of the band and the signature on the back. The other has Kiss End of the Road on one side and then the signature. That's the only two versions of the pick that I've seen. And I think those are available now on kisspickworld.com. You can actually go buy them for $10 a piece. But yeah, I got both versions of Paul's.
And you got those in Memphis?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
So, but you know, they're an okay guitar pick. I mean, I've seen prettier guitar picks, but I'll take it. You know, very cool.
Those classic rock drop picks were pretty good.
Impressive, and there's no telling where you would find one of those if you go to
keep your eyes open.
If you go
there's
to
a couple at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville, just around.
If you
look
go
at
to
the windows,
Kiss Monster Mini Golf in Las Vegas, you'll find there are three hidden around. So anyway. I got to get some Kiss Talk picks made. There are obviously I posted pictures of those. They just have not been produced yet. So,
hey, the pick guy, by the way, let me tell you something. If you need guitar picks, that guy is on it.
Absolutely.
Which is where we get ours made, right? The pick guy.
Yeah. The pick guy. And so many artists do as well. Those guys are fantastic. You shouldn't be using anybody else, but the pick guy, thepickguy.com.
Free, yeah. I mean, he doesn't pay us.
Not a dime. So
do this. But
it's one of those things. We love the product, right? So we're going to talk about the product, and extremely helpful. Bunch of guys up there, so just
yeah. I mean, they'll help you out with the and they've helped us out right with the layout and told us, hey, this may not look so good on that color. You might want to do this. I mean,
right?
Super helpful, super quick. Yeah. I mean, hey, I need these picks on Friday, and
I tell you,
there's ever been a problem.
He has come through for us several times. That's Carson Randolph, is the owner of Pick Guy Guitar Picks up in Detroit, Rock City, Michigan. So,
and we're not like affiliated with him at all.
I've never
met the guy, but I mean,
I just like the work
he does. Somebody does good work.
You gotta help him out. So
yeah, and like the Kiss Soda guy, we didn't have anything. He didn't owe us anything, but we thought, man, that's a good product, and he was a cool guy, and we put him on a show.
Yep.
So
I know we're hitting kind of our maximum here. I just want to go through a couple things here real quick. Some notes. If you haven't listened to these podcasts in the last week or two, there have been some very good ones. Three Sides actually had the Ultimate Classic Rock guy on. I thought that was a really unique guy to interview, and it turned out to be a really good interview. So check out the latest episode of Three Sides. Kiss FAQ did an Ace Frehley Origins episode where he's working on Origins 2, Volume 2, and they were kind of talking about what cover songs fit Ace and what they should do. I thought some of them they nailed, and some of them I would be miserable if I had to listen to them. But
Julian, a great guy.
That's that is the case, I think, with the current Origins Volume 1 for me. There's some songs on there that I don't like to begin with, so I don't care that Ace is doing them. So,
right.
Just my thoughts on that.
Well, and there were some songs on there that were just,
I would never listen to the song that Paul was on. What was it? Fire and Water. Thank you.
Bad Company song.
Yeah. I've never listened to Bad Company do it, quite honestly. So,
I love Bad Company. Paul Rogers is one of my favorite vocalists of all time. So
I would agree, but it's just not one of those songs that I even recall, quite honestly. So,
yeah. Well, I knew it, and that actually was one of the songs that I was like, okay, you know, because it's easy to do. You can't get enough. That's the easy one.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that Fire and Water is technically difficult. I'm just saying, you know, if you're going to do a ZZ Top song, it's LaGrange, right?
Yeah.
If you go to your local, you know, club tonight and you see a band playing and, you know, they're going to play Rock and Roll All Night. But Fire and Water was kind of one of those songs like, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. I like that.
Right. You know, I mean, hey, I'm glad Paul did it with him because it brought attention to the song, made me listen to it. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have cared. But
anyway. And pretty good video.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's a little staged, but still a cool video. Podcast Rock City, they did kind of a unique show with... they did the best two songs that each Kiss guitar player played on. Because that was one of those episodes that got you thinking, right? How can I, you know, can you pick two songs from, I mean, certainly it gets harder with Ace. It gets hard with Bruce, in my opinion.
Hard with Mark because he only played on 6 or 7,
well,
whatever.
And that was obviously a discussion. And, you know, it's kind of narrow even with Vinny, for that matter, because I think one of their rules was, can we include Creatures of the Night or can we not? You know, so
you're right,
because technically he wasn't there yet. So, but yeah, it was a great episode.
Really know who all played on that record,
right? It's difficult to even track, but that episode will get you thinking. So, in fact, that's almost one of those episodes I could go back and listen to again. So, something to think about. And last thing I want to mention is our good friends up at Decibel Geek Podcast, Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro. They've started kind of a little sideline Torpedo Dudes podcast, which their VIP listeners actually get to listen to. However, they just released kind of a special Torpedo Dudes episode, which is kind of like an intro, so that it kind of makes you want to hear more. So
right.
I think, like many of us, they want to talk about Kiss. So they kind of did a little side project there, which is really good. So I mean, their show is already fantastic when they're not talking about Kiss. So naturally, you would expect that one that is talking about our favorite band is going to be even better. So, but check out them. We love those guys up here in Nashville. So, well, Tuck, I have talked a good 17 minutes over our typical target. But there's always something to talk about, and the fact that Kiss is out on the road trying to end it all. What I would definitely tell you is, if you are on the fence about this, you got to see this show. Technically, I would tell you, you got to see this show twice, because I've seen it twice and I'm still missing stuff. It's still not done in my mind yet. There's so much going on. It's a great show. The set list is, you know, I'd give it a 9 out of 10. I don't know what to tell you. If you're sitting there going, well, I'm not going to see it because Peter and Ace aren't there, or I'm not going to see it because of something, or they're lip syncing, or whatever problem you have with it, and you're a Kiss fan, you're wrong. And I've seen several people on their Facebook pages that said, you know, I don't think I really want to go see this, but so-and-so's, you know, wanting me to go. I saw one guy on there that said, that tried to sell his tickets, and then he came back on and had to take them off again because he said, well, no, my wife says she wants to go, so now I got to go. And then afterwards, he actually apologized. He said, "I screwed up, man. You got to go see this show." And that's what everybody's saying about this. So,
I'm not seeing outside of the lip syncing thing. I've not seen a lot of complaints about it.
There is after you see the show, you can't complain.
I'm not really plugged into all the message boards and all that stuff, right. But.
Well, the problem is with all the negativity that was coming into this tour, the people that are seeing it, I mean, you know, you had those people in the front that talked about lip syncing at the beginning, but that's almost been put to rest from the standpoint of it's not really mattering and it's not lip syncing, as right. we discussed already. But the show is gorgeous, man. It is something to be seen. I don't know what tour you can equate it to if you saw Motley Crue when, you know, Tommy Lee was spinning around or flying on his roller coaster, or if you saw some amazing Queen show, you know, because, I mean, some of these shows are really over the top. This is up there, man. This is one you got to see because they are, if you like things that get blown up, if you like colors everywhere, if you like activity on the stage around the band, this is your show. I have not stopped telling people, if you're not going to see this show, you're wrong. Go see this. This is one you don't want to miss. So there's my advertisement for Kiss again. So, Tuck, I'll shut up.
Very good.
Anything on the way out, man?
This was a great show, dude.
Yeah.
We got to do this more often.
Yes, thank you, Tuck. I definitely need to do that. So,
listen. Things happen. Hopefully you guys are patient with us. The Facebook page is jamming. There's a lot of people up there taking part and commenting on things and liking the page, and we appreciate that. And you know, things are there's been some medical issues in our family, so that's my, you know, thing that's been going on. So but hey, it's getting better, and we'll get better at this.
Absolutely. We appreciate each and every one of you. Going to shout out to Chris McDowell, who was at the Memphis show with me. He's a fellow Nashvilleian here. He sat one row in front of me, and we chatted for a minute. So, hey, Chris, if you're a listener. Guys, I hope to see you out there.
Let me say, I think it was David Cathy on Facebook telling some people to check out Kiss Talk. So, thanks, David.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, David. Awesome. Yeah, I saw that too. Thank you for bringing that up, Tuck. So, this show will post on the night of the Milwaukee show, and I will be at the Chicago show tomorrow if you're listening to this in semi-real time, as we say. Otherwise, I'll see you in Philadelphia, then back, let's see what comes after that, be Atlanta, Nashville, Birmingham. I'm not going to make it to the Louisville show as planned because I got to fly to Germany the next morning, and I'm old and can't do that. So
Germany.
Going to Germany.
Playing drum for the Scorpions, are you? That finally came through.
Yeah, man. I'll be drumming for the Scorps. Going to miss Kiss by like 7 or 8 days. So because the Birmingham date is the last American date on the first leg. So going to be at that show. And then they take off to Europe for a little bit. So, but anyway, love it, guys. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We love being part of the Kiss podcast family. And we hope you love it, too. Tuck? Have a good one, man.
You too, brother. Take care.
Thanks. Kiss Talk is an Into Rock podcast production.